Thank you for taking the time to listen to this message from Stonebridge United Methodist Church. We hope you find it has meaning and relevance for your life. And now may you be blessed as you hear the reading of God's Word.
Good morning, church. We're here to bring the boom again this morning. We're wrestling with God. This is our second week of the series. Bringing the boom, wrestling with God does not have anything to do with any of the convincing football wins that happened yesterday. Although I wasn't going to say anything, and then Trey really walked in the front row and is a Baylor grad. So sorry about that, Trey. But I know we're all very proud of that happened. But really, what we're talking about today as we're going in, I mean, it's kind of along the same lines of the metaphors. When you enter into a contest like that, a lot of times it is often hard fought. It is difficult. But when you come out at the end, you're victorious, you're winning, and you've at least gained something out of the experience. And that has, a lot of our experiences with God turn out this way, and that they are wrestling matches, they are struggles, and even not in terms of awful things that happen in our lives, but even just terms of submitting our lives to the will of God and the leadership of Jesus Christ is a thing that we wrestle with in a modern day America. And what is cool is we're going to talk about Moses wrestling with the burning bush, something that should consume him, but ultimately leads him to a life that he would have never, ever imagined. So as we're doing that, I want you to think about, though, this place and even your own self as a burning bush out into the world. I cannot tell you the unique opportunity that this church has experienced and will experience and continue to experience with the location that we have, as well as the resources that have been put into this place and the resources that we need to be put in this place, because we are in the middle of Stonebridge Ranch, and we have, it's unique because most churches that are in the middle of neighborhoods kind of like this oftentimes are not big. They're not big like our church. They don't have the resources. They're usually tucked away. The big ones are, you know, along 121 or along 75. You see those massive cathedral type churches because they have the highway access. And somehow God has blessed this place, and God has blessed all churches. Let's put it this way. God has blessed all churches, but unique people have come in with God's motivation and been a blessing to this place so that we might be a burning bush in the middle of Stonebridge Ranch, McKinney, West Frisco area. And I can't tell you the number of people who simply come by because we're here. And that's one of the reasons why I think we're a burning bush and have a great opportunity as a church is one per week, maybe, you know, three per month, kind of an average. And it doesn't sound like a lot, but it's people who come in with severe brokenness about them. And they come in simply because they drove by every single day. And so I think about the resources, even of just the location we have, the building that we have, as a ministry and an immense blessing. But ultimately, I know it's the people who are here that cause the blessing. Now, if you would, the scripture for today is going to come on the screen. I'm going to read the scripture for us today. This is from Exodus. Exodus. There we go. This is from Exodus 3, verse 1 through 12. So Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led his flock beyond the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. And Horeb also is Sinai, which you'll recognize later from the Ten Commandments. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of a bush. He looked and the bush was blazing, yet it was not consumed. And then Moses said, I must turn aside and look at this great sight and see why the bush is not burned up. And when the Lord saw that he had turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, Moses, Moses. And he said, here I am. Then he said, come no closer, remove the sandals from your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground. He said further, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. And then the Lord said, I have observed the misery of my people who are in Egypt. I have heard their cry on account of their taskmasters. Indeed, I know their sufferings, and I have come down to deliver them from the Egyptians and to bring them up out of the land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the country of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. The cry of the Israelites has now come to me. I have also seen how the Egyptians oppress them. So come, I will send you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God said, I will be with you, and this shall be the sign for you that it is I who sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall worship God on this mountain. This is the not the beginning of the Moses story, but one of the pivotal moments where Moses starts wrestling with God. And I want to invite you to do something, and this may be awkward for some, but I'm going to do it. I am going to remove my shoes today because I think this is holy ground. And so if you feel like removing your shoes today, stand on holy ground with me, be in the presence of God. And my feet, yes, they kind of stink a little bit. So those in the front row, I'm very sorry about that. There are benefits of sitting in the front row. You can clap better with a rhythm. You can hear the rhythm better. The worst part is your preacher might take off his shoes because he wants to make a point. So when I engage the story of Moses, I can relate to holy ground. I can relate to being in those moments where you do want to supplicate your God to God. You do want to bow before God. And I think this is one of those moments each week for me when I come into the bridge. But I can't help when I think about Moses in the wilderness with a burning bush. My own experience in a wilderness area called Camp Bridgeport, which some of you have had the experience to be at. Some of you have sent your kids there. It is a wonderful, fantastic camp that the North Texas Conference of the Methodist Church owns and puts on great programs for young kids, young adults, teenagers, kids with special needs, and adult groups go there as well. And it really is out there in the wilderness. In fact, it is up near Bridgeport. It's in Bridgeport, Texas. It's up near Wichita Falls, which those of us who live in a McKinney area, in a Plano area, or a Dallas area, sometimes we go out there and we realize that there are only about 3 fast food restaurants in the entire place, and the only grocery store is a Brookshire's. We think podunk, right? I mean, you know, Brookshire's used to be the only place in McKinney, and then it grew, and we got Albertsons, we got Kroger, so you can always know if a place is podunk by the fact that it has a Brookshire's. And no offense if anybody works for Brookshire's around here, but it's just a case in small town West, in small town Texas. For those of you who have ever been blessed to serve as a counselor, go send your child there, go there yourself, maybe when you were younger or at the point you are in your life right now. The one thing you realize about Bridgeport Camp, and part of it is the camp experience, part of it is the location of where it is at, but there is very weak cell phone reception out there. They do not have TVs or cable service. They don't have a lot internet, Wi-Fi, except in a few locations for the directors to use. It is isolated out there. And it's an opportunity that many of us have taken to go out there and be away from the world, to go into the wilderness as Moses did in Midian, so that we can fully worship, we can fully commit to the discipleship that we seek to gain. We can fully get out of the noise of, well, hey, did my team win yesterday? And while that's important, and yes, I was doing my disciple waiting to see if my team won yesterday, which maybe is not the most appropriate setting to do to your disciple Bible study in, it was a distraction for me. And when I go out to Bridgeport, when I do these different things, I can get away from even the things that are important to me, even the things that I care about. I can get away and focus on the one thing that really is important. Now, my burning bush moment came at Bridgeport in the summer of 2001. This was after my freshman year of college. And 4 years ago, I'd been sitting on these benches at Vesper Point when I truly felt what the meaning of being a Christian was about. And I had told you the story where these high school kids came, wrapped their arms around me, and just showered me with love. And I learned what Christ was about at that point. And amazingly enough, it was 4 years after that experience, and which you see the bench I'm sitting on right there, the bench in front of me was the one I was sitting on, and this other counselor, I was serving a counselor at this point, this other counselor named Jillian, turned to me after a unique worship experience where we were by ourselves with about 2 other counselors. The campers had all left, and yes, we were awesome counselors that let our campers go back to our cabins by themselves. So we were sitting there as a group of counselors, and Jillian turns to me and says, I really feel like I'm called to go into the ministry, to just give my life fully to God in professional service, to lead a church, to go be a missionary. I don't know what it is, but God is calling me to full-time ministry. And I remember my exact words were, I think that would be awful. Which she said, oh, that's very affirming. Thank you very much. And I was like, I just don't think I could ever do that. But part of my call and hundreds of other kids who have been called to Christ and to ministry, to service, to medicine, to law, to all sorts of different professions or even just ways of life have happened at Bridgeport because of this location and place in the wilderness where you can go and there's nothing else to take your attention except for the love of God in this. If you look at the other neat thing about Bridgeport, if you look at the terrain of Bridgeport, this reminds me a lot of terrain. If you've ever been to Israel, this is kind of what the mountains of Israel look like. We always think of these really desert dry scenes from Charlton Heston movies, but this is a lot of what Israel looks like, maybe not as green. And if you look at a map, actually, Bridgeport and Israel are very much on the same latitude on a global map. And so we can imagine Moses in the wilderness surrounding Midian would be on a mountain very similar to the one we all go to Camp Bridgeport or other camps in the area to get away from things. And it's here that God descends upon a bush and gets Moses' attention by setting the bush on fire, which draws Moses' attention in order that God can call Moses to leave his land, return to Egypt, and set the Hebrew people free from the tyranny and slavery that they're undergoing under Egypt's new pharaoh. Apparently, the old pharaoh used to know Joseph. You remember the story where Jacob's son Joseph gets, sold into slavery, goes into Egypt. He ends up making the Egyptians a fortune, allowing them to prosper through 7 years of famine. And so they have high respect for the Israel God or the Hebrew God because of Joseph. But this new Pharaoh doesn't recognize the Hebrew God. He doesn't recognize Joseph's authority and therefore has started becoming afraid that the Israelites have grown to a huge number. In fact, later in Exodus, it says there were 600,000 men alone. And then there were kids and then the wives on top of that, as well as perhaps any servants that they don't count in the census. So Israel had grown huge and in fact was getting as big as the Egyptian population themselves. And so the Pharaohs got scared of this, and they started increasing the slave load of the Israelites, and they started making them build pyramids and doing other things to kind of suppress that birth rate and suppress the power that the Israelites might have. I think it's so telling, though, that when the author of Exodus tells the story of Moses getting called into this situation, that he focuses on Moses' attention span. And for me, I'm borderline ADD. I know many of you have entered the Twitter generation. Even if you're in the older generation, you're part of the Twitter family now, and everything is in 140 characters, and it happens at the instant. We're used to those kind of things. And so the author focuses on Moses' attention span as the same phenomenon, I believe, happens in our lives as well as out at Camp Bridgeport. I mean, take the teenagers who sit in here or that you know in your own lives, take your own kids, no matter how old they are, take yourselves, and think about how many hours of the day you spend without noise. You spend in front of the TV, in front of the cell phone, in front of computer games, whatever it is, whether you're at work or whether you're at play, we have constant noise, we have constant light, we have constant things to which it's hard to hear God's voice. It's hard to hear and see the presence of God in the bush. And so Moses, out in the wilderness, gets his attention caught. And I'm not so sure that God maybe hadn't been speaking to him beforehand. I'm not so sure that maybe God isn't constantly speaking to us, constantly trying to reach us, and yet all of these distractions in our lives. For Moses, it was his father-in-law, it was his family, it was the herds he had to keep. It was the city he lived in, and it wasn't until he got rid of those that he was able to hear God. And so even the things that are important to us sometimes, the things that God gives us, sometimes they can be the reason we don't hear God's voice. And so it is important for us to take that time with us and God. So it's not until Moses actually does pay attention, though, that's interesting. I believe God talks to us constantly. But in this story, it's not until Moses actually sees the burning bush that God does this extreme wonderment of this bush that's not consuming with this huge flame, sees the bush burning and turns to it and says, I really got to figure out what this is. And so God's got his attention. It's only then that God calls out, Moses, Moses. And Moses admirably answers, he says, here I am, which is a very common answer for I'm available to you. I'm very present. I'm paying attention in the Old Testament. And in no way does he hide from God at this point. Maybe he doesn't know it's God. Maybe he's just fascinated by the bush, or maybe he's just awestruck at this first moment. But he says, here I am. And in no way is he afraid or does he hide at this point. But when he realizes that it's God is when he hides his face from what God may ask him to do. And he retreats again. He doesn't have the distractions to retreat into, but he hides once he realizes that God might be calling him for something. Now, there is a reason behind this. The reason is because the thought was is that if you stared into the face of God or you were too close to the holy, perfect presence of God, that it would kind of be like a Raiders of the Lost Ark situation when they open up the Ark of the Covenant and the Nazis are looking into them and they all get, you know, mutilated and burned to flesh. That was what they thought it was going to happen, is if you looked in the face of God, you would surely die. And here, but it does seem very typical, though, that when we hear God, you know, we don't think of God as a God that we're going to come to church and experience and we're going to die because of that awesome presence. But we do have a sense that when we come to church, or maybe when the pastor calls and you see my cell phone number come up, that you don't answer, perhaps, because on the other end of that line is, Trey, what are you going to do for me? You know, Trey, I need you to do something for me. Laura, I need you to do something for me. Adam, I need you to do something for me. Deb, I need you to do something for me. There's always some kind of calling that's going to come out of the church, that's going to come out of God. We're actually known for pestering and annoying people, and people are scared and afraid of us. And perhaps that's church's fault for not being the comforting part of the burning bush, the warming part of the burning bush. But perhaps it's part of our fault, not me as a person, not me as a pastor, and that we do experience God and we see God calling us. In fact, it may be a cell phone call or a text message or something like that. We see those and we do just as Moses did. And we hide our face, we hide our schedule, we hide our pocketbooks, we hide those things that we could give to God, because a very holy lifestyle, a very holy God is something we're wrestling with in the first place. that to live up to these commandments, to live up to these expectations of all of the things that God requires of us is something much more difficult and much more challenging, although much more rewarding than the more entertaining, easy lifestyle it is to go about what, you know, are our other priorities in life. And so we've got our routines down, we've got our patterns down, and God may call us into something more rewarding, but it is certainly going to be more difficult to go into. And so it's very easy to hide our things. One of the things that we do want to focus on as we're in a time of stewardship and giving is to realize that if you are here listening to this, you have pretty much already said, "Here I am," in some respect. In fact, a lot of people around the world, even though the new Pew Research says that 20% of America is now not affiliated with any religion, that's still 80% of America that is affiliated with some form of religious beliefs. And out of that, it's most, I think it's around 60 to 65% who is claiming themselves as a Christian. Now, that is kind of odd because statistics show that only about 23% of each city in America actually goes to church or any kind of worship form on a very regular basis. And so 23% of 65% of 100% have kind of gone, heard the call and started going with them and started serving in a different area, or at least going to experience God. But out of that 100%, at least we can say 65%, if not more, have at least made some kind of "Here I am" claim. That, "God, I recognize you are here. God, I recognize you are present. God, I recognize you are real." But out of that 65%, an overwhelming majority have found out what God wants from them and have hid their face away so that they don't have the opportunity to have their lives disrupted. They don't have the opportunity to wrestle with God, to get in on the mat and really engage in the hard things and the hard beliefs and the hard practices and the more inconvenient truths about God. Instead, they take themselves away. Now, the way that I knew God was speaking to me was when I finally started listening at this point. And it was because God started speaking to me in this awesome worship service. I was feeling the Holy Spirit come over to me. Now, I told you the story. This counselor looked at me and said, "You know, I'm feeling called to full-time ministry." Of course, my first answer was not too flattering about myself and that would be an awful life, an awful experience. But the next thing was, I could never do that. And out of there, in some still silence of awkward silence between the two of us, came a loud voice that I apparently only heard that said, "I will be with you." But I still didn't think I was right. I actually ran from God. I wrestled with this calling of God. And I know many people who have wrestled with these callings from God as well. So I wanted to give you some reasons that maybe you can relate to of why Moses is actually the wrong person for this job. At least why he thinks he's the wrong person for this job. So number one reason is we find out that Moses has a stutter. He's slow in speech or slow in word is what it says, but usually thought he had a speech impediment. So if he goes in front of Pharaoh, he's nervous, he's going to start stuttering. And typically we think of, you know, that is not the Toastmasters presentation that we expect from a leader. So Moses is nervous because how can I communicate the authority of God with the freedom that God declares if I can't even get the words out of my mouth? Which obviously we know the stutters, you know, that doesn't impede anyone from this. But Moses is afraid of this. Number two, Moses is wanted for murder in Egypt. If you don't remember your Exodus history, Moses was born a Hebrew. He was part of the Israel nation. He was saved from the mass genocide that Pharaoh was going to do against firstborn children. His mom put him in a basket, sent him down the river. Pharaoh's daughter came, found the baby, had compassion on it, decided to adopt it as its own. So Pharaoh is part of the royal court here, and we'll get to that in number three. But he still has this Hebrew nature about him, and he sees one of his own Hebrew people being just whipped unmercilessly. Apparently, the Pharaoh's guards were just, the guards over the Hebrews were told to just have it out on the Hebrew people. And so he sees him, this Hebrew slave on the verge of death. And he goes over instead and he kills the Egyptian guard because he can't stand it anymore. He takes God's justice into his own hands, right or wrong. And so this is a very serious offense. And basically the entire court of Egypt starts looking for him. They want to kill him. This is where Moses runs away to Midian. Now, the other point, number three, is that Pharaoh is technically Moses' step-grandfather. And there's a little bit of a family squabble in there that how can he show his face in front of these people that he grew up with for so many years? How can he show his face in front of people that had grand expectations for him? And he basically let them down. And on the other side of this is that Moses has been raised Egyptian. In fact, the women at Midian, his own future wife, calls him an Egyptian when they first meet him. And in fact, he's known as the Egyptian all throughout this calling story. And so he looks Egyptian, he dresses Egyptian, he acts Egyptian, he talks Egyptian. He acts like the enemy the entire time. He is the enemy, essentially. And at the same time, he is still one of them. And so how is he going to go back to his own people and convince them that he's not the enemy, that he's someone that can be trusted? And Moses has a hard problem with this. And then number four, this whole concept, or number four is the who am I factor. I'm a goat herder, cattle herder, sheep herder. I still live with my father-in-law. I have kids to take care of. I've got a stutter. Who am I? And this massive self-doubt about Moses of who am I? And we see that throughout scriptures is who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and that I should proclaim freedom from the Egyptian rule? And so really in summary, with the self-doubt, the family squabbles, the wanted for murder, the speech impediment, Moses might just be the absolute worst pick of all these people and the worst prepared. It's kind of like when we go to somebody and say, we would love for you to teach children Sunday school. This is a very important ministry. And someone says, I am awful around kids. I can't do that. And I really don't know any part of the Bible. And I've got all these different reasons why I can't teach children Sunday school, or why I can't swing a hammer at Habitat, why I can't set chairs out, or why I can't do different things. Maybe it's a time issue. Maybe it's a skill issue. Maybe it's a competency issue. Some kind of issue comes out. And yes, in fact, you might be the worst equipped person for children Sunday school. And I'm going to look at you honestly and say, you might be the worst prepared person for mission work. But God usually doesn't call the perfect people or call the people who are most equipped. God tends to uplift the people who God calls. And throughout the entire Exodus story, God continuously says, this is to show people my glory, that I will do this. Even the plagues, all the things that we consider bad is all, later on, God tells the Israelites to turn around. Did you know that? God sends the Israelites out, and before they get to the Red Sea, he tells them to turn around and go camp out closer to the Egyptians, because then the Egyptians will start to overtake you, and I can show you my power. And yet we are so reticent to allow God to shape us that way, to allow us to use God's power, when in fact we put a lot of stock in strategies, in training, all very important, but none as powerful as the strength of God. And so I wonder, first, how many people are missing God's calling in their life because they're just not listening, because they're so distracted? How many people are missing the most fruitful life of stewardship that you could have, or that I could have, because we just don't take the time in the wilderness to hear God? And secondly, how many people are not as fulfilled in life as they could be with God's calling if they accepted that God doesn't make mistakes about you? That the person God calls, the person that is felt passionately that something is important in the life of the church or the life of the community, that when you see a need and you feel empathy toward that need, the person that God calls toward that ministry or passion, that God has put that on your heart for a reason. And that God doesn't make mistakes about who God gives that feeling to. How many of us are missing that because we're just hiding? But this is God's promise to God, and this is God's promise to us. I will be with you. It doesn't sound like a whole lot. We always tell people that who are in grief, that God is with you. And sometimes it's used as kind of this comforting thing that, you know, if anything, I'm not alone. I've got at least one relationship where somebody cares about me in this thing. But in this is not that God is giving Moses a playbook or a textbook of everything that could happen or go wrong or all the solutions to this. It's a sign that God will continuously work throughout the process. And God lives up to this promise the entire time. God wants Moses to take this on faith. We also see, if you read further on in this call story, that God does say, you know, throw your staff on the ground, it turns into a snake. Put your hand in your cloak, it turns into a leper's hand. And then the snake turns back into a staff, the hand turns. There are these signs and wonders, but the very first thing that God wants Moses to do is take this by faith. I will be with you. And when you encounter into a difficult situation, know that I'm going to send a pillar of cloud, or I'm going to send a pillar of fire. I'm going to part the Red Sea. I'm going to send the plagues. I'm going to give you the words to say, know that I will be with you. Not just as a, hey, God's my buddy and he's with me, but that God is going to move. If God is calling me to something, if God has sent me on this holy mission, God will make it happen if I keep moving forward. And you know what? God will even tell me to stop when God needs me to stop. I think The second part of this promise is even more crucial. Promise that I will be with you. And as a sign of this promise, you, after you free the Israelites from Egypt, you will come back and worship me on this mountain, which kind of sounds like an egotistical promise, right? That you're going to go do this for me, and then you're going to come worship me. So who's getting, you know, what's Moses getting out of this? Is Moses getting a paycheck out of this, or is Moses getting any kind of credit out of this? What's Moses going to get out of this? But this very promise is seen in the burning bush. Now, a few years back, you may remember, if you drove up I-35 at all, you could look out and you could see scorched blackness for just miles on end. You remember the wildfires? They went through Oklahoma. They went through Bridgeport area of Texas. They went through Northwest Texas. And wildfires, Colorado, wherever they happen, don't leave anything. They have no pity on anything. They burn it up. They send it down. It is gone. And yet here in the wilderness, when God descends upon something with the Holy Spirit fire, we don't see burning. We don't see consumption. We don't see ourselves getting torched and mutilated. We see a bush that does not get consumed. And in Moses, we see a person who comes out of this not only alive, but vibrant and excited. We see somebody who is committed to the cause. We see somebody who has now a fulfilled life versus one in hiding and one back with his father-in-law in Midian. We see somebody who has fulfilled their task in life and somebody who has experienced God so fully that they are then on fire for God. Not destroyed, not consumed. When God calls us to something, God equips us for it. God makes us excited. And even in that, the experience we have, the promise is that we will come and worship on the mountain again. Not so that we can thank God for everything that happened, but so we can come to the worship of God again because we want to go on the mountain again. Because we seek to hear God's voice again. We want to hear God's calling again. We can't wait for the next mission that God sends us on. And Moses does this when he returns to Horeb or Sinai and he ascends the mountain and they get the commandments, they get the law, they get the way of life for the Hebrew people so that they can go and they can be that nation that will be a nation above all nations that will provide the holy light in the middle of a dark world. And what's telling about the whole Exodus story is, I encourage you to read the whole Exodus story, is that the Israelites move through. And if you remember, this is kind of, you know, you may think it's cruel, but the first generation of Israelites that escapes Egypt, they don't make it to the promised land on purpose. It's not really that far of a walk. It doesn't take 40 years to go there. But they complain the entire time. And they can't catch Moses' enthusiasm. They can't catch his experience with God. They can't seem to grasp onto that because they are so stuck in the ways of Egypt. They are so stuck in, well, why'd you bring us out to the wilderness to die? We could have died comfortably back in Egypt. And then later on, it's, well, why'd you bring us out to this? You know, this army is going to kill us. We could have died in the wilderness, or we could have died out here. And the entire time, they're only thinking about being consumed and dying. That this journey in the wilderness is only going to be a bad thing. And several times, even the way we approach servants of the church, we think of it as, I know this is going to be hard. I know this is going to be difficult. I know it's going to take up a lot of your time and resources, but we really need this to be done. And all we present and all we think about when we give into the life of God, whether in the church or whether in our own individual lives, is this consumption that we are going to be eaten up. Our lives are going to be destroyed by this. And I don't think God does recognize that we can't have these people starting the nation of Israel. We can't have the people who are only thinking about death. We can't have the people who are only thinking that this is just going to ruin our lives. And so God actually says, go back around. And until every last person dies of natural causes in the wilderness, then we can move forward. And by this point, we have a new generation, and all they've known is wrestling with God. All they have known is wandering in the wilderness, wrestling with God. What is God going to do next? How is God getting this water? Feeding off the manna from heaven every morning and every afternoon. All they know is reliance upon God and the mission and the destination forward. And they are willing to put anything they have into this mission to go forward into the promised land so that they can live the life that God has for them instead of looking back to Egypt and saying, that was so much better. We may have been being whipped. We may have been being beaten. We may not have had our freedom or our own lives, but at least we had a house. At least we die in somewhat comfort. And so we have this generation that moves from death to life, that can go begin the life of the Israelite nation, the life of the tribe, the life of calling that does not consume us, but instead invites us to thrive. Now, I believe, at one point in Bridgeport, I sat down with a small group, and I was in eighth grade, and the counselor was talking about being called into professional ministry, and said, you know, someone gave me this great advice that if you go through all these other careers or you go through all these other passions and you just can't do those, if you can't do anything else, then you go into ministry. And I think about that, really makes my job sound like a loser. If you can't do anything else, then go do what David's doing. Honestly, looking back, there's a lot of things I could put on my resume simply from this job, including janitorial service, you know, interior designer, anything like that. I could be doing a lot of things with my life, and I really think I would have been fine if I would have stuck with medicine or physical therapy or the things that I was very interested in. I've also heard of a young man named Zach, and who's in Atlanta, Georgia, as a freshman in high school when he started a nonprofit to help free victims of sex trafficking just in his high school, and now it's a nationwide movement. He said the same thing, and he could say the same thing. He could be doing a lot of other things as a freshman in high school and been just fine. I have heard teachers say that I could be doing a lot of other things. I've heard coaches say I could be doing a lot of other things with my life than shaping the lives of young people, and I would be just fine, and I'd earn a lot better paycheck. I've heard the people who do Big Brothers and Big Sisters program say I could do a lot of other things with my time. I could do a lot of other things with my Saturday mornings, but you know what? I'd be just fine with that. I've heard doctors, lawyers, business professionals, even politicians who have said, there are a lot of other things that I could be doing with my time right now, and I would be just fine. I could be doing another job that'd be a lot easier. I could be home kicking back watching a football game. Heck, I don't even have to work. I could rely upon my partner's salary or something like that. I could be doing a lot of other things with my life. You know what? Life would be pretty good. And we all could be doing something just a little easier. We all could be doing pretty good. In fact, we'd enjoy our life. We'd get done. A lot of people would come to our funeral and they'd say, he, she lived a good life. We enjoyed their company. They were pretty good. But to a T, all of these people's reasoning for sticking with what they do, for why they do that, is when God called their name and they said, who am I? That God answered, I will be with you. And out of faith, they started down this journey, whether it was freeing people from slavery, whether it was becoming a doctor, whether it was becoming a teacher, whether it was going into business, whether it was ministry, whether it was staying at home, whether it had nothing to do with the job, it was simply a passion and a way of life that I'm going to say thank you to every single person who blesses me throughout the day. Whatever it was that they were called to, they started out of faith and said, I don't know where this is going to end up, but I trust that if God is with me, that God will make a way for this to happen. And God's second promise is that I will return to the mountain that I once was on when God promised these things. And then instead of saying who I am, I will say you are great. You are holy. You are God. You have brought me through the wilderness. You have brought me through this task. You have brought me through this journey. And I could not help but to come here and kneel and take my shoes off and say I am on holy ground. Lord, you are perfect. You are divine. And you are the one worthy of praise. I couldn't help it. And so we keep on keeping on in what God calls us to do, even though some of us are burnt out, tired, exhausted, because we've seen after 40 years that God does deliver the people according to God's promise. And so I want to invite you to find some time in the wilderness and look for your own burning bush. Look for that place, look for those scriptures, look for that song, look for that person who has a burning bush for you that allows you to spend some time with God with no other distractions. To find out perhaps what you may be called to. And you could be 88 years old, retired from two jobs, and God still is going to call you. Retirement doesn't mean the golf course for God. You could be 6. You could be 3. You could be 21. You could be 18. You could be 33. You could be whatever age you are, doing whatever it is you're doing, and you may have missed God's call. And God's call may not mean a career change. It may just mean a way of life. It may mean service of some sort. It may mean being a different kind of mother or father. It could mean a lot of different ways. There are a lot of methods that God uses to shape this world. But we're never going to realize them if we don't turn off the TV, if we don't sometimes get away from our family even, if we don't turn off all the things of life going on around us and spend time with God. And you'll realize, hopefully, that this God that called Moses is not as scary as you might think. Now, that's as individuals. And as individuals, we did, if you weren't here this past week, we started this thing called God's Tip Jar, which is only happening for this week and two other weeks after this. But this is just an idea, you know, based upon the whole service industry thing that people think about the church, that, you know, they come here, you pay a service, we give you something. And, you know, kind of the opposite of that is that we want you to look to God and see how many blessings God bestows upon you. And then, hey, if you get good service, hit God something back. Whether it's money, whether it is a prayer card, whether it is, hey, I served something today because you called me to do that. And, you know, we invited you, come during offering time and pour it in. I'm going to pour my cup in during offering time to just let God know all the times that God blessed me throughout the week. We did that, and that's a very individual thing. It's an individual thing that we can look at where God is burning bush for us. But as I mentioned at the very beginning of when I started talking so many hours ago, that this place is a great burning bush. It is a burning bush in the middle of the world. And we are individuals who gather here by choice to recognize God's blessings in our lives and celebrate God because we can't help it. It is so exciting to see how God is moving us and shaking us into a way that is more perfect and more holy than the way that we have come from. And so one thing I do want to mention as a church is that we do want you to pray about your calling in this church. And then also in those visioning cards, pray about what our calling as a church is so that you may be a burning bush inside the church and that the church together may be a burning bush for the world. And that'll come out in your stewardship card. It'll come out in your volunteer service. It'll come out in a lot of different ways that'll go forward in this extravagant generosity campaign. But I invite you to see how many different ways this place can be a burning bush. 3/4 of the ways I can tell you those people that stop by out of a random nature, I can't even tell you the stories because they're confidential. But the other 1/4 of them are so amazing at the place this place can be that.
Thank you for listening to this message from Stonebridge United Methodist Church. We invite you to join us in worship every Sunday morning at 9 and 10:30 in either our celebration service, which offers a blended worship style, or in The Bridge, which offers a contemporary and soulful worship style. For more information, visit our website, mysumc.org. Have a blessed day.